The views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of this station, JVC Broadcasting Management, or its sponsors.
Hi, this is Attorney Ken Auerbach from the law offices of Cartier, Bernstein, Auerbach, and Steinberg. If you or someone you care for has been injured through no fault of their own, please contact my office by visiting myinjuryli.com. Be it auto-related accidents, construction, product liability, wrongful death, slip and fall, nursing home negligence, or medical malpractice, please contact us by visiting myinjuryli.com. For nearly three decades, our firm has successfully represented our clients. Through constant communication and support, our clients never feel left out of the loop. We care about their pain, their loss, and their dignity, and of course, their compensation. Please don't hesitate to contact our office to discuss your case by visiting myinjuryli.com or call 631-654-4900. That's myinjuryli.com or call 631-654-4900. Don't wait another day. Hi, everyone. This is personal injury lawyer Ken Auerbach from Cartier, Bernstein, Auerbach, and Steinberg. Welcome to our program, From No Fault of Your Own. It's our goal to give you an insider's view of bringing and proceeding with various types of personal injury actions caused by the negligence of others and some other party involved in the accident, and you, unfortunately, are the person who is the victim, the person who is hurt. Among these areas we will explore are car accidents, trip and fall accidents, construction accidents, medical malpractice, nursing home neglect, products liability, and the serious injuries that often occur. Through our journey together, it's my hope that we can remove some of the mystery, some of the uncertainty, and help you feel both empowered, knowledgeable, and confident in the process. And also, I'm hoping we could have some fun on the show and also help you at the same time. So let me tell you a little bit about myself and how I started on my journey as a personal injury attorney. Well, I was born in Brooklyn, which I joke with everyone is helpful and allows me to understand people and situations intuitively with spidey senses. My dad served in the Korean War, and after he was out, he was honorably discharged. And when he got out, he self-studied to become an airframe and jet mechanic for Pan American World Airways, for which he worked there until they actually closed or went out of business in 1991, and he ultimately became the chairman of the largest union there, the Transport Workers Union, 504, and its 5,000 members. And I tell people a lot of what my dad did is similar to what I do as a lawyer. He would do arbitrations and represent people and defend them with regard to issues they were having, and it's pretty similar to what you do as a trial lawyer. My sister and I were raised in Islip Terrace by these two amazing parents, went to East Islip High School, and then both of us were first generation in our family to go to college. In college, I was beyond fortunate to have a law professor named Rudy Cartier, who explained the law in a way that not only was interesting, but was really exciting at the same time. I did make a mistake of answering his question in our first class when he asked, "Who is a hockey fan and for which team?" And I answered, figuring, "Oh, this man's in his late 30s. He must be a Rangers fan." Well, I made a big mistake. I said I was a Rangers fan, and I thought that was a good thing. However, not realizing that he was an ardent New York Islanders fan, having season tickets since day one until they moved to Brooklyn. When I met him, they were in the midst of their four Stanley Cups and dynasty in the early 80s. He told me immediately at that time that my answer was my first strike against me, which he never let me forget. Rudy became my mentor, my friend, and ultimately I interned in his law office, became an associate attorney, and had the incredible blessing of being his partner and friend for over 30 years, until his passing a little over a year ago. In my opinion, I can tell you hands down the best all-around lawyer that I have ever met and for whom I am forever grateful. He's a true lawyer's lawyer. That means a lawyer who other lawyers go to get help when they need it. And he was a man of wit, humor, and amazing talent. Well, Rudy saw in me something maybe that I didn't even see in myself, a natural ability in me to practice in the area of personal injury law. Pretty much like a fish in water, I took to it, and he gave me the opportunity to do what I so love, which is to help hurting and broken people and make a difference in their lives. Rudy always emphasized what my parents had instilled, that there's nothing more important in practicing law than honesty, integrity, and hard work. And I am forever grateful for my friend. So I've been doing this now as an attorney for about 33 years. Been married to the most amazing woman, my wife, Lauren, for 34 years, who has supported me in this journey and put up with many hours that as a trial lawyer that you have to put in behind the scenes, oftentimes doing work that may not be seen, but it is seen when you come in to the courtroom and you're expected to go ahead and prepare and know what you're doing. And it comes across that way if you do, and it comes across that way if you don't. I believe, I can tell you that, it's actually a privilege and a serious responsibility to represent people injured by someone else's negligence. And why do I say that? Well, I think an attorney first has to recognize that they are representing a human being with their own unique life experiences, troubles, and challenges. I believe in the area of personal injury law, particularly, that the attorney has to see that unique trouble, that unique pain, that humanity of that individual who has experiencing something or is experiencing something possibly resulting from someone else's negligence, and now they're injured physically and oftentimes emotionally. Your client comes to you first and foremost to find out if you're willing to devote your best efforts to recover for their losses and to give them as best that you can some semblance of justice, even though unfortunately you can't oftentimes give them their health back the way it was at the beginning. So this raises two questions. First, what is negligence? Second, do I have a viable case? If you're just tuning in, again, my name's Ken Auerbach. The show that we have here today that we're presenting to you is from no fault of your own. And if you want to reach me, you could reach me by calling me at 631-654-4900 to handle all your personal injury needs. Or you can get us on the web at www.myinjuryli.com and be available, or Google me, Ken Auerbach, and I will come up and my website will come up and would love to chat with you. So let's get back to what a negligence case is and what are the things that one has to know to see if there's a viable case. Well, negligence is failing to do something a reasonable person would have done in a situation, or doing something of an unreasonable manner. Now, let's start off with a simple example. I'm going out of my vehicle for a leisurely drive. I stop at a red light, and then suddenly, without warning, I get plowed into the rear of my car by some driver of another car, another vehicle, a truck. Is that negligent? Absolutely. And why is that? Because I had the obligation to stop at a red light, and all approaching vehicles behind me, they had the obligation to not crash into the rear of me, and they did. But of course, many situations are really not so clear-cut. What if it happens at an intersection, and there's a question as to which party had the green or red light? Did someone cut someone off? Was someone speeding, using a cell phone, intoxicated with alcohol, or under the influence of drugs? Each situation literally has to get assessed carefully by the attorney, because whether there is or isn't a viable case can turn on just one slight difference in facts. How is this done then? It's done through communication. This requires the attorney asking questions and doing a lot of listening to that potential client. The reality is that if there's no listening and communication between attorney and client, on day one, you could be rest assured that there'll likely be bad communication going forward, and a failure to communicate means a failure to get a just result. I'm pretty excited today that we're going to have an opportunity to bring in a guest, someone that I've actually worked with professionally, a neurologist who has been involved in the practice of neurology for many years. His name is Dr. Fred Mendelson. Fred Mendelson actually was a doctor that I've had on trial. Juries absolutely loved him. Why? Because Fred came across honestly, truthfully, and as a person who was essentially teaching them something they didn't understand, and oftentimes teaching something the lawyers and the judges probably didn't understand. And with this program, our hope is, as we go through it, that some of the issues that you may be experiencing, such as neurologic injuries, or treating with a doctor that may not be answering questions, or treating with a doctor that may not be concentrated on your treatment, or what should I as a patient be asking the doctor? What should I expect out of that doctor? And so we'll have Fred Mendelson on the other side of our show from No Fault of Your Own. And we are excited to have him here. And he's going to be someone who I'm sure that you will love to listen to and will learn a lot from. We'll see you on the other side. Welcome back to our show from No Fault of Your Own. We're excited to have you here. We're excited to deal with issues that are important in the area of personal injury so that we can make you feel empowered, knowledgeable, and assure that you're going to get, hopefully, a good result and justice in the process of personal injury. We're just so fortunate to have our guest here today. That's Dr. Fred Mendelson. Fred Mendelson is a neurologist. I'm going to let him introduce himself after I ask him a few questions. But I want you to know that there is no finer physician that I've ever met in the area of personal injury, and nobody that believed that his job was to do the best he could by his patients, to work as hard as he could, and to try to give his patients recovery and comfort. So, Fred, are you there?
I'm here, Ken. Nice to speak to you tonight.
Oh, it's so nice to have you, Dr. Mendelson, and it really is a privilege, Dr. Mendelson. As you know, we had the opportunity to work over the years on cases of people who were injured from all sorts of trauma, and one of the things that I can tell you that I most appreciated was over the years that the people that went to you would always come back and say, that you really did care about them and you were just a gentleman, but it was a person, more importantly, a person who really wanted them to get better. So that's to your credit, Dr. Mendelson.
Well, thanks for the kind words. It's very nice to hear. Thank you very much, Ken. Okay.
So, Dr. Mendelson, could you tell us a little bit about yourself and how you came to be a neurologist?
Well, I completed medical school in university in Louisville, Kentucky. And then I had an internship here on Long Island. And I, when I was finishing my internship, I was exposed to the neurology department at Nassau County Medical Center. And there were three wonderful attendings there that were knowledgeable, kind, and extremely good physicians. So when I was looking for a residency, I couldn't decide what to do. And I picked neurology, and I'm so happy I did so. It's kept me interested for the last 45 years.
Where did you grow up, Dr. Mendelson?
I was born in New York City, and then I spent the first 10 years of my life in Maspeth, Queens. And then we moved to Uniondale, and I was there until I went away to medical school.
Could you tell me and us, our listeners here, a little bit about your career?
Oh, sure. I started out as a general practicing neurologist in Port Jefferson. I started working with a fellow named Bob Roth, who was my senior partner. He took me in. After a number of years practicing general neurology, I got very interested in neurorehabilitation, which is a field of neurology that deals with brain injuries, spinal cord injuries, and that sort of thing. And because of that, I ended up as the medical director of the rehabilitation unit at St. Charles Hospital. I did that for a number of years and then helped start an 18-bed traumatic brain injury unit in King's Park at the St. John's Nursing Facility, where for the following 10 years, I took care of pretty much 18 severely brain injured people.
And how would those individuals come to the facility, Doctor, as a result of what?
Well, at the St. John's, it was always because of brain trauma, usually traumatic brain injury, but some people had suffered massive strokes, intracranial hemorrhages, that sort of thing. But the majority were pretty much traumatic injuries.
So when you say traumatic injury, could you give us some examples of how an individual would suffer a traumatic, in this case, a neurologic brain injury?
Well, sure. I mean, usually for severe injuries, bad enough to require rehabilitation in an inpatient facility, those patients would have suffered direct head trauma. But there are other forms of head injury, and certainly it's much more common to have minimal brain injury in the form of cerebral concussions. Those patients with quote, simple concussions, of course, wouldn't be admitted to a long-term brain injury rehabilitation facility.
That's an interesting statement there. So, Doctor, a person can actually have a brain injury and it not be what you would consider to be something acute, but it still could be a serious injury?
Yes, definitely. There are forms of what are considered to be minor brain injuries in the form of a cerebral concussion that may not even be associated with loss of consciousness, but just some alteration, sudden alteration in level of consciousness, usually in awareness or that sort of thing. And some of those patients may be troubled with symptoms for the entirety of their existence. So they're not really minor head injuries, although they appear to be, because a lot of the testing that's done on them turns out normal. For example, CAT scans may be normal, MRI scans may be normal, but the patient still has significant traumatic brain injury.
So, and these symptoms that you're talking about, do they happen sometimes well after, or can they happen after the accident, or a considerable time after where someone recognizes it, so that initially they may not recognize it and for whatever reasons it's not otherwise diagnosed properly originally?
Well, sure. A lot of symptoms are so relatively subtle that patients may not be completely aware of them at first. For example, one leading symptom after a concussion is imbalance, a feeling of lightheadedness or vertigo. People define it differently depending on the symptomatology. But if, for example, an individual is involved in a motor vehicle accident and they lose consciousness briefly, there's a good chance they're going to be put on a stretcher by the EMT folks and brought to the hospital with them not even having without even standing up. So that they're lying down, they go to the emergency room, and they're asked questions. Well, what are your symptoms? And then usually the symptom is, I have a headache, or my neck hurts, or my shoulder hurts. They don't know that they have lightheadedness or imbalance. They haven't been up yet. They haven't tried to ambulate yet. So that may be overlooked by the emergency room personnel or the physician that sees the patient in the emergency room, because the patient doesn't even know they have that symptom. Likewise, other symptoms like things like a lack of attention or inability to concentrate. It's unlikely that a patient in the acute stages is going to be aware of that as a symptom.
So,
that symptom would potentially bother them for many, many months or even years.
So when we hear people having concussions, what is a concussion by definition?
A concussion is a sudden, brief loss of consciousness. But the patient doesn't necessarily have to lose consciousness entirely. It may just be an impairment of consciousness where they feel confused, or they have no memory of the event. and still have not actually lost consciousness.
So the concussion, when we use those words, that's an impacting of the brain actually inside of the skull. Is that correct?
Yes. Yes. I mean, most concussions occur because of what we call acceleration deceleration injury, where the patient's motion stops suddenly, but the brain, which is floating in this protective sea of spinal fluid, continues moving.
All right, Doctor. Dr. Mendelsohn, this is just fascinating stuff. I'm going to ask that you come back on the other side. We're here with Dr. Mendelsohn here talking about issues that I don't think most patients actually hear about. And Dr. Mendelsohn is a foremost practitioner in this area, and I'm just so excited to have him here to explain us things that are just critical in head injury cases. You're listening to our program from No Fault of Your Own, and we will be back on the other side. Hi, this is Attorney Ken Auerbach from the law offices of Cartier, Bernstein, Auerbach, and Steinberg. If you or someone you care for has been injured through no fault of their own, please contact my office by visiting myinjuryli.com. Be it auto-related accidents, construction, product liability, wrongful death, slip and fall, nursing home negligence, or medical malpractice, please contact us by visiting myinjuryli.com. For nearly three decades, our firm has successfully represented our clients. Through constant communication and support, our clients never feel left out of the loop. We care about their pain, their loss, and their dignity, and of course, their compensation. Please don't hesitate to contact our office to discuss your case by visiting myinjuryli.com or call 631-654-4900. That's myinjuryli.com or call 631-654-4900. Don't wait another day. From No Fault of Your Own, we're just excited to have you here today and be joining our program as we explore together the issues in personal injury law that sometimes are not so obvious. And my experience has been over the years that one of the things that you as an attorney need to do is you need to make sure that you educate your client, because it's a scary situation sometimes when they're involved in something where their whole world has been turned upside down. Their health is not good, and now they're faced with a legal process that they've never been a part of and they've never been exposed to. So today we have Dr. Mendelsohn on our show. I am so excited to have you here, Dr. Mendelsohn, and go over a lot of these topics that are just so important to understand the area of personal injury and to understand the importance of speaking to your doctor speaking to you, asking the right questions, having an attorney who isn't just there just to gather up the money at the end, but is there to work you through a process that oftentimes is life-changing. So I want to just get back to Dr. Mendelsohn. You were before we took the break, talking about acceleration-deceleration injuries. And could you tell our listening audience what you mean by that?
Well, sure. You have to understand that the brain is it's covered by a thin layer of fluid, spinal fluid. And the reason for that mainly is to protect the surface of the brain from the inner table of the skull. When individuals have a sudden acceleration and then deceleration injury, the head stops moving, but the brain, which is quite delicate, obviously, it doesn't stop moving, and it floats through the spinal fluid and strikes the inner surface of the brain, of the skull, which doesn't give. I mean, it's solid. It's a solid bone. And that's what usually results in the injury. In addition to that, that sudden acceleration, deceleration causes what we call a shearing force. Understand that there's a difference in mass between certain parts of the brain. So just for a simple example, gray matter versus white matter, they have different densities and different weights. So when there's a sudden acceleration and a deceleration, some of those parts of the brain stop moving faster than others, and there's a shearing or a tearing of some of those fibers in the brain where the axons attach to the neurons. So basically the tails of the nerve get separated from the center of the nerve.
So let me ask you this, doctor. I've seen over the years many times people who have gone to the hospital and, as you said earlier, maybe didn't make any complaints about issues with their brain because maybe they didn't ever get off of the stretcher or off the board that they were on. And in some cases, they'll have testing there. Maybe they'll even have a CAT scan of their head. Other cases, they wouldn't have a CAT scan of their head. What should a person be doing when they start feeling, symptoms? And what types of symptoms would alert them to, hey, maybe my brain was injured in this accident, that otherwise wouldn't be so obvious?
Well, sure. I mean, the obvious symptom, of course, that everybody's aware of after head injury is they probably have some form of headache, severe, mild, moderate, but they recognize because we're pretty used to dealing with pain as humans. But there are other things that are not quite as obvious. For example, slight feelings of imbalance or lightheadedness or more sensitivity toward light and sound that they may not even realize is a problem, except that they're more irritable now because the light's bothering them more than average or the sound that they're hearing is a little bit more intense. So they get a little irritated. Perhaps their attention span is not as good. They feel they can't concentrate. They're fatigued a little more than usual. And usually the people that they live with and love them the most may notice this before the individual does. The individual just said, gee, I'm not feeling right. Something's a little off. But the family members that he's living with are having trouble putting up with them because they're moody. They can't concentrate. They go to the store to come back with five items and they come back with two or three or the wrong item. And they're not even aware that this is necessarily related to the head trauma that they had. They thought it was a mild, simple concussion. They didn't even lose consciousness, perhaps.
So when you say a mild concussion and a person's having all those other symptoms, the word mild seems really to be out of place in terms of this person having a problem, right? And how they're responding.
Absolutely. We nickname these people the walking wounded because they're terribly damaged, but no one else realizes it because, gee, well, they had a normal EEG and they had a normal CAT scan. So maybe they're just malingering. Maybe, they just don't understand what's going on.
So that's interesting. So a person can have a head injury as a result of trauma, and a different type of trauma with an acceleration, deceleration type of an injury. And a CAT scan, as an example, that they'll do in the hospital and take a picture of the brain is not necessarily going to show you on that exam that person has that injury, even though they do. Is that correct?
That's right. By definition, a cerebral concussion has a normal CAT scan. If the CAT scan is abnormal, then it's not a cerebral concussion. Then it's a contusion or a hemorrhage or something else.
Interesting. That's interesting. You know, one of the things that comes up in this area, if you're just joining us, by the way, this is Ken Auerbach, and we're with Dr. Mendelsohn, a neurologist well-known in the area of treatment for traumatic injuries to the brain and other parts of the body. We have them on our program from No Fault of Your Own, where we're trying to explore issues that otherwise I think oftentimes are overlooked, and really appreciate having you here, Doctor. One of the issues that I was going to bring up, and it just sort of with your last statement, is you know, sometimes we hear from insurance companies and their attorneys, they're trying to downplay whether someone could get hurt because, as an example, there isn't a lot of damage to the vehicles involved. Do you have any thoughts about that?
Oh, sure. I think car manufacturers like to brag that their bumpers will tolerate a 5 or 6 or 7 mile an hour impact, and the car won't be damaged at all. But the average person doesn't realize how much impact 5 or 10 mile an hours can be. When I used to sometimes be asked to go to a local high school and talk about be careful driving, you know, to the driver's ed class, I would mention to them that, you know, you may think you're only going 30 miles an hour, and that's a very safe speed. I said, but consider this. You probably can't run much faster than 8 miles an hour. So picture running 8 miles an hour and running directly into a telephone pole. Put your hands behind your back and just run face on and do a face plant into a telephone pole running full speed. You're only going 7 or 8 miles an hour, perhaps, at the time of that impact, but you're definitely going to be damaged from that, believe me.
Well, that's a great example. I've never heard that before, but certainly that undercuts the argument that you need to have tremendous damage on a vehicle to have a head injury, and really appreciate that as an example. We're here with Dr. Mendelsohn on our show From No Fault of Your Own. Dr. Mendelsohn, do you have a few more minutes if I bring you back on the other side? Because this is just fascinating stuff that you're giving us here today. And would love to be able to let our audience hear some more of your insight in the area of personal injury law, and have that opportunity that most people don't get.
I'm happy to hang out.
Thanks, Doc. Hey, welcome back. It's Ken Auerbach from No Fault of Your Own. And we really are glad to have you here today. As you know, I'm a personal injury attorney with the firm of Cartier, Bernstein, Auerbach, and Steinberg. And we do all types of personal injury matters, car accidents, medical malpractice, construction accidents, trip and falls, pretty much anything you could think of. And we really love to help our clients and we love to help people. So if you do have a need, please contact us at 631-654-4900. You can also Google me, Ken Auerbach, A-U-E-R-B-A-C-H, or go on the web, www.myinjuryli.com. So we're back here with our guest, Dr. Fred Mendelsohn. Can't thank you enough for your time, Dr. Mendelsohn. I'd like to kind of go over a few more of those things that you raised. I got to tell you, Dr. Mendelsohn, we could keep you on here for hours. Are you available for the next, 48 hours?
Someone brings me some food, sure.
Okay, that's great. Dr. Mendelsohn, you said something before about acceleration, deceleration injuries. Could you give me an example of how does that happen? Like in a car accident as an example, how could you have an acceleration, deceleration injury?
Well, I mean, usually, for example, you're in a car that's moving, let's say 30, 40, 50, 60, 70 miles an hour, and then it impacts something. So now you're no longer accelerating, but there's a sudden deceleration. The movement stops. Well, parts of your body are not stopping right away. So especially your brain is not stopping. Even though your skull may stop when it strikes the windshield or the steering wheel or the airbag, the brain inside your skull is still moving forward. You can't stop that. Nothing stops that until it hits the inner surface of the skull.
So you mentioned earlier about this idea that the brain is not just made up of tissue. The brain is also made up of nerves. Is that correct?
Yes.
And so when a person is injured in an accident and a person suffers a quote-unquote concussion and they're having these symptoms, is that because sometimes the actual nerves, these fine nerves and these nerves throughout this person's brain, essentially I guess they're like the electrical cords, are somehow injured?
Yes, I mean, some of those nerves will actually tear. So as I said, there's a difference in density between the nerve, the nucleus of the nerve, the center body of the nerve, and the axons, which are like the limbs or the appendages that come off that central thing. So now there's a difference in those densities. Now, some of those can actually tear. But more than that, there may be a neurochemical disruption in those nerves. So even though the nerve itself may be intact, the neurochemicals that cause communication from one brain cell to the next get interrupted.
So when that happens, some of these symptoms then affect, obviously, people, I would assume, different ways, depending on an individual. Would that be fair to say?
Absolutely true, yes.
And so would it be fair to say that not everybody is the same? In other words, each person, depending upon what their the way their body is, the way their body's made, and the life, the way they've lived their life, and whether they've had issues before or not have issues, that all of that could sort of factor into it?
That certainly factors, but as well as what part of the brain was damaged significantly, as opposed to what part of the brain was less significantly damaged or tolerated the trauma well. So obviously, if the speech center of the brain was more damaged than the brainstem, then the individual might be suffering from some difficulties with word finding rather than dizziness. But if the problem involved mainly the brainstem or the back of the brain, then the patients would have significant problems with balance, vertigo in some cases, lightheadedness. Yeah.
Now, one of the things that I think you said, which is fascinating, is that certain types of injuries, oftentimes, they're not going to show up on what some would think would be the test. So you said, as an example, on the CAT scan, an injury to the nerve connections in the brain, it's not going to show up on there. Are there any objective tests that could be done for a person who is suffering with symptoms such as, let's say, dizziness, imbalance, things where, you know, they're having cognitive issues? Is there anything that they could do so that this mystery in terms of how their life has been turned upside down, but no one seems to be able to help them or explain it, could be done for them?
Sure. Well, for example, this estimated that about 8 to 10% of people with cerebral concussions, even though the CAT scan is normal, they may have some subtle changes on MRI scan. And that's only because there's such a significant difference between the density of the spinal fluid in the brain versus the brain. But from a functional point of view, there's a test called a VNG, which has to do with balance.
Can I ask you a real quick question? When you say may have some subtle differences, is it correct that the MRI might show something, but still oftentimes the MRI itself oftentimes doesn't show something when this person has suffered that type of an injury, that mild traumatic brain injury?
Possibly 90 to 95% of MRIs will be completely normal.
All right. So what we know is the CAT scan basically isn't going to help you. The MRI maybe in a very small percentage of the case, but now you're talking about some other type of test called a VNG. Is that correct?
Yeah, commonly called vestibular testing, V as in Victor, vestibular.
Now,
and patients who have significant symptoms relating to either feeling dizzy or lightheaded, they probably most often show some subtle changes in vestibular testing.
It's really interesting, Doctor. I know I've had the privilege, again, of having you on the stand and testified. And one of the things that I thought was fascinating was you being able to tell the jury and explain that this VNG is an objective test. It's the gold standard, and it's a test that testing for someone having what they call nystagmus or an involuntary movement of their eye. And I believe the way you explained it to me, Doctor, was that it's essentially showing that the wiring in the brain, between the brain and the inner ear particularly, has damage to it. And because that electrical cord is damaged, the eyes then tend to start moving around involuntarily, and it isn't something you can fake.
That's right.
That's correct? So, listen, Dr. Mendelsohn, we took so much of your time today. I really would love to have you back on another show or a couple of other shows, because I think you really bring something to the medical community in many ways. And you bring that sense that you do care. You bring the sense that people who do have head injuries and brain injuries are not just imagining it, and they deserve to be recognized and listened to. With that, I'd ask if you come back on another show, and we will have you at another time.
I'll be happy to. Anytime.
Thank you, Dr. Fred Mendelsohn. Ladies and gentlemen, again, this is Ken Auerbach, and we're on our program From No Fault of Your Own. We've just had an amazing interview with Dr. Fred Mendelsohn today, and I can tell you, hands down, the best neurologist that I've ever actually walked into, worked with, listened to, someone who cares about patients. You know, it's our desire, ladies and gentlemen, to make a difference in this world and hopefully be able to help you and help you in a way that you can get fair and just compensation. Please feel free to contact my office. We'd love to hear from you. There's no charge for that. It's a free consultation at 631-654-4900. You can get us on the web at www.myinjuryli.com or just Google yours truly, Ken Auerbach. Can't wait to be back and explore some more issues in the area of personal injury law. Thank you.
The views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of this station, JVC Broadcasting Management, or its sponsors.